podcast, the wrestling show that sometimes breaks kayfabe and discusses comics, movies.
31, Levi's Stadium, Santa Clara, California. 76,000 fans, no matter what Meltzer says. Hi, I'm Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Strawhead Regan.
We're the hosts of the Cyan of Regan podcast, and today we'll be discussing the greatest spectacle of them all, WrestleMania 31.
The grandest stage of them all.
Live from the studio.
We have a studio?
Well, we did when we were over in San Jose setting up before Santa Clara's WrestleMania.
Right.
That was a fantastic setup over there.
That was.
Right next door, prime location, right next to the best taqueria around.
That was a great taqueria. Like, for those who didn't know, and I'm sure there was a couple of people that listened to the show or follow us on Twitter or Facebook or what have you, we did go to WrestleMania live. Like, we went there. We were in Levi's Stadium, and I don't know what it is about being there live, but it completely changed my perspective on a WrestleMania or even a pay-per-view event. Completely changed my perspective.
There's no better way to experience it than being live in the audience. And we had very good seats. I was pretty happy with where we ended up. But being pulled in, I mean, you can be at home and get really hyped up, and you'll slap your friend on the shoulder and be like, "Oh, look at this! Look what's happening! Look at that!" But there's nothing more than actually being able to get caught up and root and cheer and scream and chant, just at any moment and everything being swept up in the wave of fandom that is WrestleMania and the WWE.
Oh yeah, like the one thing I will say about the live experience, besides the fact that, you know, we had some really rowdy fans in the crowd, and I mean, some, you hear all kinds of fans for everything. There
was
Rusev
fans.
One
fan was the rowdiest of them all.
Rowdy. No.
Ronda Rousey. Hashtag called it.
You did call it. You, JR, and who? Someone else called it that she was going to be at WrestleMania.
JR called nothing. JR was listening to our podcast, stole my idea. That's all I know.
So that's where we're going. He took your booking, basically. He stole it outright, is what you're saying.
JR screwed Cyan. You heard it here first.
Wow. Sounds like a feud for, like, WrestleMania 32.
Stole it.
There was something very different about being there live, seeing people chant, like, when you're at home and you're sitting watching it, you hear some of the crowd, and even rewatching this WrestleMania, the crowd that you hear on the network or on pay-per-view, the Blu-ray, whatever, does not match in any way, shape, or form what was there on Levi's Stadium on March 29. Like, it was a completely different environment.
The volume you feel indoors is not even close to what you can hear on the screen. And in addition to that, the feeling of it, you smell their entrances. Like, the fireworks go off, and you can smell that sulfur. You feel the fire of the Undertaker walking
out.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, you're all like, is my face burning? Like, what is
it,
this?
It was, I was pretty scared when the Undertaker fire came out. I felt it, and we were relatively close to the ring in the entrance, but I didn't think we were close enough to feel it, you know?
Yeah, they had the heat rolling on that one. And it's also cool because you get to see things kind of being set up, the detail that they put into it. I mean, we'll touch on this a little bit more, but the detail to the point where when they were setting up Bray Wyatt's entrance, they carried people out.
Mm-hmm. And we thought they were props.
Still, and set them down as scarecrows. It's like, oh, those are props. And then Bray Wyatt brings them to life and everything. It's like, wait, they carried those out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so that was really, that was
a
that
human
one.
Being was lifted up. By,
I think the
like,
other
the
one that got me
the detail that
too.
They go to, like, protect it. Amazing.
Yeah, that one and the Sting entrance when they were setting up the Kabuki mask looking people, you know, and they had the drums with the Japanese, like, paraphernalia in it. Like, I didn't know who that was for. I kept asking, like, is this for Sting? Because I know he's got, like, a Kabuki look to him, but he's never been portrayed as a Japanese character, so what's happening?
You know, four guys dressed up as Sting, but why the taiko drum? Like, why is that there?
Yeah, so... Absolutely,
you said something like, what in the fresh Japanese hell?
Yeah, well, what in the fresh Japanese hell, which was stolen outright from your your fresh hell line.
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you have it. That's okay.
Just for that
one. Just this one time. No, but the show was incredible. Absolutely amazing. Fantastic experience. Rewatching it. It was still a great show. I think one of the best WrestleManias ever.
I'm going to agree with the critics that are calling it one of the greatest ever. I'm putting it in my top five WrestleManias off the bat, like without even looking into the other WrestleManias right now.
And I'm guessing in those top five are probably 17, 20, 21, 31, and...
Well, you have three so far that are right on the very top three.
what are your five?
Off the bat, I would say X7, 20, right. if only because of the last match and because of the Brock Goldberg fiasco. I love watching that. It's one of those, like, I can't stop watching it.
The best live breakdown of an audience.
Yeah, just like, it's such a great, like, it's, you can show that to someone who's not into wrestling and tell them, like, this is the story, this is what's happening, this is the behind the scenes, and look at this crowd just completely shit on a main event quality type matchup that was just a horrible match. the one where John Cena beats JBL, so that would be 21, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yep, so there's 21, and 3. 3 is still in my top.
Oh, of course, WrestleMania 3. I don't know, yeah. I forgot that one.
Yeah, and then 31 is wedged in there somewhere. Like, that's where I'm putting this WrestleMania.
It's overshadowed for me by WrestleMania 12, and that's carried entirely by the Iron Man match, which...
Right.
Is one of my favorite matches of all time. Like,
right, right. Like, I at least have more than one match, like... To really appreciate a WrestleMania, I need at least 3-4 matches. If it's just a one-match card, then it's probably not going to make my top 5 or my top 10. This one at least had, just looking at the card right now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 matches in this card that are amazing. 6 out of what? 7? 7 full matches? Without counting the, that's without counting the pre-show stuff.
Pre-show was good.
And the pre-show was amazing.
let's get into it, actually. So, they kicked off with Tyson Kidd, Tyson Eustace Kidd, as we have dubbed him, and Antonio Cesaro.
Millennial
Clown.
Cesaro?
you like that crossover right there?
Yeah, I like that. Cesaro Clown.
Cesaro Clown, yeah. With Natalya fighting... defending their titles against the New Day, the Los Matadores, and the Usos. Was it just me, or was the best part of this match, and I'm not trashing the match, the match was great, but the best part of the match was during Kid and Cesaro's entrance at the end, Cesaro punting the Matadors' hats?
Because Matadors usually, they throw their hats in the ramp. So when Tyson Kidd, actually, when they came out, he kicked something. I don't remember if it was the hats, but he kicked something. And then on the way out, he's kicking the hats again.
So, yeah, but Cesaro punted the living hell out of that hat.
Yeah, he did. He was like, bye.
Was great. the New Day just randomly... I thought the New Day were going to go over... Just because they randomly were the only ones on the pre-show that had some sort of, like, fanfare. Like, Big E came on the overhead, and he's like, you about to get so fifth in WrestleMania that you need to take a shower, and then you're going to feel the power. New Day?
Like, New Day? I still don't understand that gimmick.
Precisely. there were precisely two New Day marks in the audience.
In the entire 76,000 audience.
Out of all 76,000, Meltzer, listen. There was precisely two New Day marks, and they kept battling back and forth. New Day, New Day, New Day, New Day. For no reason.
Yep. I joined in on that because I feel bad for them. And I like the people involved in New Day. And I like what the gimmick is supposed to be. I just don't understand what they're doing with the gimmick.
Right? So
I don't get it.
So much they could do, and they were able to be a bigger deal. I just don't know why they're losing so much. Los Matadores, they're a team that really, with that gimmick in this day and age, like, you can't really do much. I mean, you've got El Torito, and that's cute that they have, you know, the little guy in the bull suit and everything.
Right,
but
like the mascot,
that's not
going to
be your tag team champions. The Usos, they've been there. Like, they're going to be 16-time tag team champions by the time
they're at the point where there's nothing wrong with the Usos as a tag team act. There's nothing wrong with them. Like, I think the problem with the Usos is that they haven't really been challenged as far. They've become the John Cena of the tag team division, if that makes any sense. Like, they rely on them too much. They put the titles on them too much because they don't know what to do with the rest of the division. So, like, I'm indifferent to them, but not because of their skill. I'm indifferent to them because, like, they haven't told a story with them that I'm interested in for a long time now.
I agree. And the Usos, they delivered solid matches. I think one of the big highlights of this was actually they were building the Natalya Naomi
feud. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were building that. And that's a total diva storyline, right? That Naomi and who is it? Naomi and Natalya have like a feud going on there? Is that what's happening?
Not that I've noticed in Total Divas.
No? Okay. Maybe it's something that's, like, supposed to be happening, but it's for next season, and this is just, like, the preamble of it. I mean, I don't know. Like, I really don't know where that's coming from.
Well, Total Divas kind of runs, like, 3 months behind, but it's really just that, like, once Natalya and Tyson kind of fixed their relationship and have rekindled in love, like, they rekindled over being evil, and and nice. And Naomi ain't having that and everything, and so she gave her the rear view in the middle of this match,
right.
Knocked her down, which I hate that move watching it on TV, but I marked out for it live. I thought it was really cool to see live. It's just like, I'm going to put my ass in your face while doing a split kick, but
yeah, there's something about
it was cool.
Again, there's some things that live look completely different. Case in point, when we get to the Randy Orton match, spoiler alert, there's an RKO in it. a couple of them, actually. And there's at least two of them, I want to say, that when we saw it live, it looked like absolute murder. But when you watch the recording, the actual broadcast, not that impressive. And I'm talking about like the ones before the actual finish, like if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, certain things on live just come out better. Like, especially when you're close enough to, like, appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, these guys only get one take. So, I mean, their quality of acting and putting the show together is incredible. Big finish, Kid and Cesaro were able to pull out the win. Got the pinfall, retained their titles, went forward, and then immediately turned around and went right back to the ring a few minutes later to join the 30-man Andre the Giant Battle Royal.
Double duty.
Do you find it as weird as I did? Do you find it as weird as I did that almost all, if not all, of the people involved in this Fatal 4-Way Tag Team Championships went straight into that? I thought that was pretty strange.
Into the Andre the Giant Memorial?
Mm-hmm.
No, because, I mean, ever since Punk left the company last year, and ever since other wrestlers have complained about not getting spots at WrestleMania, there seems to be a movement backstage of making sure that WrestleMania has every wrestler. And I know Chris Jericho mentioned that before when he pitched the Money in the Bank so they could have more mid-card people in the card. right? And that eventually became its own pay-per-view and its own legacy and whatever. But now it seems that they're trying to put all the tag teams in the pre-show, all the wrestlers that they can on the Memorial, since it's a 30-man Battle Royal. So that's like your whole roster, most likely. And even the ladder match for the IC title was, what, 7 people? So, I mean, and even, and arguably, I know we kind of like didn't care for the fact that there was a tag team match for the Divas division. And it's still a pointless thing to have a tag team match for a division that only has a single men's match. But I know what they're doing. They're trying to get everyone their payday, because WrestleMania is the big payday. So maybe some wrestlers that are like tag teams, you know, they don't get maybe that much pay. Like, I don't know how their pay works. JR would be someone who knows how this works. So maybe they're just trying to get some people who normally wouldn't get that much, that they appreciate them working, have them do double duty so they can get that paycheck. That's what I think is happening.
I see that, but at the same time, I mean, working 2 matches,
oosh. Yeah. Especially
like Cesaro showing how strong he is. I mean, he's still, like, they didn't let him do the big slam on Big Show, but he still lifted Big Show up and held him there for a second.
Yeah, he lifted him. Like, he went all the way to the ropes, right? Like, he carried him from the center of the ring.
Not tired? Like, come on,
dude.
Man.
Cesaro is a monster.
The
like
Swiss Superman.
When John Cena says that you are a monster in the gym, I take that as gospel. Like,
you heard it here first. Straw Hat Rican just put over John Cena. It's
what is happening?
This is the first.
Yeah,
this
and
the first.
We're doing the double turn later, aren't we?
yes, we are. So Big Show ended up winning the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I'm conflicted. Big Show didn't need it. Big Show really, like, he's been so exposed that, like, he's not believable as a dominant monster.
Even though he should be, like,
he's too damn big to be, like, a jobber. Like, I get it, but I still wish it had been somebody else.
Yeah, I still think the first Andre the Giant Memorial should have been Big Show. Like, I think it makes too much sense from a storyline perspective that the guy who at one point was being billed as, you know, Andre the Giant's nephew or whatever back in WCW wins something called the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle. This should have happened last year, and this year should have been Cesaro's, like, turn to, you know, do the lift and, you know, the whole carrying him out of the rope and whatever. I think they did the booking backwards. So maybe hopefully next year we'll see something else. I actually, for a second there, I thought Cesaro was going to win this year again. Like 2 years in a row. It might
have
not meant something. Yeah, he should have to rectify for, like, him winning last year and nothing happening from it. Like, pairing him with Paul Heyman and never falling through with that. I still don't understand whose idea that was and why they stopped it, but since Brock, I don't know what the story with Brock is going to be right now, but they really need to do that pair up again, like, at some point. Like, Cesaro and Heyman just makes sense to me.
Cesaro and Brock make sense to me. I think they could have a great match.
Oh, yeah. So, again, I don't know. I don't disagree with Big Show winning. I just think it's backwards, is what I think.
I could see it being backwards. I am just shocked that they ruined Axelmania. I mean Axelmania had been in the Royal Rumble match for 60 days, and he was eliminated from the Royal Rumble and the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at the same time.
Hmm.
He lost 2 matches that day in one moment, and it took 29 men to do it. That's how strong actually.
Yeah, that buddy is. The buddy surf spot was actually pretty funny, live and on the broadcast. Just seeing everyone grab him and sort of like body surf him out of the ring, hilarious. Like,
I really need to see Axelmania like have legs. Like, I love it so much that I hope they don't drop it.
I really think Axelmania is going to be one of those things where it's like it's over, but it's over in the funny way. Like, it'll never be serious. Kind of like how Santino was over, but in a funny way. Never, like,
yeah,
they
Santino was the last guy in an Elimination Chamber match once.
No, like, no, I remember, I was just gonna mention, like, I remember there was, like, that small, little tiny moments where, like, oh shit, like, are they gonna pull the trigger on a Santino Marella title reign? Like, what? But it never actually happened. So maybe we'll get the same with Axel. You know, maybe we'll see him appear like in a title match of some sorts, like an Elimination Chamber or what's that, Six Pack Challenge or whatever, if they ever do one of those again. Or even like a Money in the Bank tease. Who knows? Like, maybe there's legs for him. I really wish something happened with him because he's like a guy who has pedigree, but they've never been able to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think, you know, third generation, everything like that, and somehow he never got the Randy Orton spot, or never had the, you know, chameleon ability of Cody Rhodes or anything like that. Cody Rhodes also very, you know, undervalued, heavily undervalued.
Yeah, if there was like a way to gauge how they value wrestlers, Curtis Axel would be on the bottom of the value, the actual value, like, chart. Because they really do undervalue him. And to the average person, he's not worth anything because they've never shown him do anything worth mentioning, you know? Like, he's always been kind of a joke. Like, he's been booked as a joke since inception. So what can you do with him? But
it's true.
Yeah. I think the less said about him, though.
We saw a few comebacks in the Battle Royal. I loved seeing Return of Bo Dallas. I'm a big Bo Leaver myself. I got the wall to prove it. And we saw the main roster debut, even though it's not permanent yet, of Hideo Itami.
We did.
He got in some good picks. He was eliminated by Big Show, I believe, as were most people. Big Show tossed out quite a few people leading up to the end there. But the big moment of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal had nothing to do with the winner. It was Mizdow finally turning on Miz.
Yup. It was, how long have they teased this? It's been months now. It's been, Lord,
it's
has it's
several months, pretty much since he won the titles for them about
6 months?
Survivor Series?
Oh my God! It's been so since Sting came on WWE TV for the first time, they've been teasing this. Basically, that's a long build for a breakup.
So Mizdow chose
for a comedy act,
not right. So Mizdow chose that he would not, you know, bow down to Miz and, you know, eliminate Big Show for him, so that Miz would go on. I don't really know why Miz didn't make it more of a let's do this together type thing, to try to eliminate him.
Well, because
it's kind of a weird thing to try to send in.
Well, that's his character, though. Like, he would send his stunt double to do it for him. Like, he doesn't strike me as someone who would say let's do this together. Like, that's not his character. Like, that wouldn't make sense for him to actually go like let's do this together. The type of heel he is like the pussy heel, you know, he has to like send someone to do his work, especially like in this gimmick. So it made sense to me. I mean, granted, it's the Big Show, so you would think, you know, within the confines of like wrestling reality that he would be like, maybe it'll take the both of us to do this. But again, the character, so obnoxiously egomaniac, like so in love with himself that he's just like, nah, like, I'm gonna let him do it. You know?
One of the most over guys, though, was Mizdow.
Mizdow, like, oh my God.
His cheer during that was incredible throughout the entire show. I mean, that whole match, like, people were hot for Mizdow. Mizdow finally eliminated Miz, real hot. And I believed he was going to take down Big Show. Like, he kept knocking him down. He had him in the pole spot. Like, I thought he was going to do that Benoit-type...
the chokeout?
Pull Big Show over the chokeout, dragging him over. But, you know, c'est la vie, Big Show won. And,
yeah, I actually... when they teased it so much... I mean, they did tease, like, a good, what, 4 or 5 minutes that Mizdow was going to do this. And then it's like, nope, didn't happen. Like, I was sure that it was happening. So,
yeah, from when Mizdow eliminated The Miz at 14 minutes 45 seconds, was eliminated himself at 18 minutes 5 seconds. So for 3 minutes and 20 seconds, it was just Big Show and The Miz and Mizdow. So that's quite an amount of time for one person to try to go up against a giant. So they did put a lot of teasing in there.
Yeah, like I said, I honestly thought it was happening, but...
WrestleMania kicked off proper with a huge Intercontinental Championship ladder match. Seven competitors, Daniel Bryan, Bad News Barrett, R-Truth, Dean Ambrose, Luke Harper, Dolph Ziggler, and Stardust. This match had a lot of really good spots. I mean, Dean Ambrose, he got murdered with that powerbomb through the ladder.
Yeah, he didn't get quite eliminated. He was just out of the match at the point where he got thrown out and, you know, broke the ladder and, like, hit his head or whatever. And they carted him off. The paramedics carted him off, right?
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, like, him smashing,
like, he's dead.
There, it gives you the argument for why he wouldn't be able to stop a cash-in that night. So, mm-hmm. like, we've got some continuity in that. Luke Harper, he took some pretty heavy hits. I mean,
he was bleeding at one point.
All over the place with that ladder.
Yeah.
Stardust took a pretty bad slip, but
can we talk about the Stardust Sparkle Ladder?
The Sparkle Ladder. Oh my gosh.
MVP of the night.
That ladder was incredible.
All just I have to say,
encrusted with rhinestone, shiny as hell, like the glare coming off of that thing, and the glare coming off of Goldust himself. Like, Goldust is a shiny man. I didn't know that. Like, I'd never seen him live before. So shiny.
Yeah, very, very shiny. And not so much that, but, like, from now on, whenever there's a ladder match, I want personalized ladders. Like, why was this never a thing before? Like, the Hardys and the Dudleys and all that? There was never, like, a personalized ladder. Like, I need to see this now. Because certain characters, it would fit their theme just to be, like, so psychotic and, like, crazy to make their own, like, ladder. And for Stardust, like, as soon as he pulled that thing out, everyone was like, oh, my God, he has his own ladder? Why?
It's because, like, there's no one out there who hates Stardust. Like, everything Cody does is over, and he never gets to the spot with it, and it's weird. He came out, I don't even know what he was wearing. The dude looked like Yoshimitsu from Tekken. Like, he had, like, the flag runner going up his back and wings or something. I don't, that suit was over the top.
Yeah, it was. I thought he looked like a Japanese, like you look, he had like a weird Orochimaru Yoshimitsu thing going on, and I was just like, what is he wearing and why?
Especially since I really wanted him to be wearing his Fastlane attire, right? I really liked that evolution of the character, and for it to step back to the bodysuit was a little disappointing for me.
Yeah. Yeah, he still hasn't gotten back to that. Which I don't understand, but c'est la vie, you know. I guess eventually we'll know if he goes back to that or not. But I will say I know you weren't big on the winner of this match.
Dude,
Dolph Ziggler
and Daniel Bryan going all Goku
the headbutts,
Vegeta headbutts on the top of that ladder. They looked like they were killing each other. Those were solid headbutts.
I was watching the replay. And they took about 5 headbutts, like, legit headbutt to, you know, head to head. And then after that, they were kind of like, you know, doing the side thing on their shoulders. But they took like 5 of those to the face. So fairly impressive.
And then again, on the Raw after Mania, you know, when Bryan buried Ziggler, because, you know, they want to shove Daniel Bryan down our throats so much.
You're still on that, aren't you?
It should have been Ziggler or it should have been Ambrose, I think. And I
oh my god, you wanted Ambrose to get the IC belt? Like,
I
what?
Hate Ambrose. Don't get me wrong. I hate Ambrose. a lot, but
Looney
Tunes should have gotten it, or Ziggler should have gotten it, because I don't understand Looney Tunes. I don't understand why they set up the whole thing of Ambrose and Ziggler not liking Brian and hinting that there's something dark about Brian that you don't know because it only happens backstage, and being like, you're a turd, you're a turd, you're a horrible person, you're a turd. They kept doing that, and then Brian wins, and it's like, let's bring out the legends to celebrate the reign of Brian, wonderful, right. Wonderful Brian. And then Brian gives the title shot to Ziggler the next night, and like, handshake, you know, we're buddies again, like, no, you just called him a turd. I want to know why you called him a turd.
I want to understand why
Brian is a turd.
Yeah, I want to understand, like, this is coming from a fan of Daniel Bryan. I want to understand what the point was of having the legends come out in that video package and celebrate with him as if he wasn't over. Like the man is over. Like, he doesn't need legends coming out and validating his spot in the card, right? Like, I think we can all agree with that. Like, live crowds love him. Last year he won the World Heavyweight title doing two matches, right? He beat Triple H and then he beat Batista Orton. He doesn't need validation from old legends. The man who probably needs validation in front of fans is someone who didn't get any type of, like, legends to back him up for his match, and we'll talk about that later. So I don't understand that spot. Unless they're trying to, again, what happened with you, unless they're trying to make it so painfully obvious that they're behind him now, that they overpush him, and then they push the fans away from him. Like, that's the only thing I can think of that's happening here. Because I don't understand why they need that. Like, that backstage segment was pointless. It didn't need to happen.
It's either that, hopefully, they're trying to turn him heel because he's a heel. And, or what I'm thinking is they're trying to more go for the legacy of the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, and I can see that.
Really drive the fact of, like, that was my belt, and it was my belt, and it was my belt.
But at the same
time, remember
when
this belt was amazing? Like,
yeah, like, just him having the belt should validate it. Like, yeah. Again, this is a guy that's already popular. You don't need to drive the point home that the belt is a big deal now. Like, same with, well, we'll get to that later. There's another belt here that's probably going to get made into something bigger because of a certain person holding it.
Ugh.
And again, that double turn. Oh my god, you saying ugh to this person is just surprising to me.
I loved him. He was amazing. Until he buried.
Now that being said, so we have one good match already. This is match number one that was great, right? We're already one for one, so.
Yeah, the ladder match was great. I was disappointed by it. I loved the fact that I was sitting arms crossed during Daniel Bryan's entrance and his celebration.
While the entire stadium, 76,000
strong. People were like looking at me confused, like, is he okay? Like, he just doesn't like Daniel Bryan. Why doesn't he like Daniel Bryan? So, mind your own business, lady behind me. How about that?
Yeah, right, like is he sick? I think someone asked, like, if you were sick.
They did. But they learned that I was not sick when I jumped to my feet for Randy Orton, my favorite wrestler, defeating Seth Rollins in a great match. I don't know, people kind of crapped on this match that, like, they hoped it would be a show stealer and it wasn't a show stealer. Like, it wasn't the best match on the card. This was a fantastic match.
I'm going to say this. This was a good match, period. And it might not be a show stealer, but we are going to see that RKO on highlight reels for years to come. Because that was by far the craziest RKO we've seen from Randy Orton. Easily. And it was that great because of Seth Rollins. Because that... It was curb. He was gonna go for what, second curb stomp, and he just like, yeah, second curb stomp, and Randy just kind of like lifts him, like from his head, and I mean live, at least live.
Popped him up like he was a seal.
Yeah, like Seth Rollins looked like he was flying in the air for like a long. There was some air time there, and he just landed straight on his face from that RKO. Like, I mean, that could have been, that was easily a top rope. Actually, it was the height he was on was more than what he would have been in if he was doing a top rope move. Like, he was
RKO,
up there in the air.
That RKO that he did to Seth that night pushed out my former favorite RKO when he did the RKO out of the shooting star press to Evan Bourne.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
still
yeah.
incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But the pop-up on this one, like, I never would have expected something like that to happen. It was so
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. And it came out of nowhere, which...
And not just that. I mean, there were really dedicated fan chants that occurred during this match. There was a chant for Phoenix Splash when he went to the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
There was tons of punt chants. Everybody got on their feet thinking that we were going to see a punt.
Oh, that's right. Finally. Yeah, we almost saw a punt, which we haven't seen in forever.
I hope we get the punt one day again, but I mean, I know it's banned, so we probably never will, and we'll only get a tease, but a friend of mine that I was talking to actually had a really good point of why we didn't see a punt. She said if he had landed the punt, he never would have cashed in because he would have been out. Because
spoiler alert.
They did sell it that if you get hit with the punt,
yeah, you're out for months.
You're gone. Like, yeah.
Like people have damn near retired from the punt. So, I mean...
Somebody once got the punt because they were stupid.
Stupid. I'm amazed that punt didn't send them to developmental. Like,
still my favorite punt of all time. My favorite just breakdown in the middle of the ring of all time. Oh, man.
But again, good match.
Also, really, really good attacks on Joey Mercury and Jamie Noble, too.
Mm-hmm. The RKOs that he did on Joey Mercury and Jamie Noble look brutalizing live. Like, on the broadcast, they look good. They don't look bad. It's just... And I think it's because we were sitting in the area where, like, the ring sounds were just coming in through. Like, there was something with the acoustics in the area where we were at where everything just sounded like utter, like, straight-up murder. And those RKOs sounded like shotguns. So, I mean...
Yeah. It's also funny seeing Orton do the RKO to shorter people, because Orton and Rollins are both taller than you'd think they are. Like, mm-hmm. they're both in the 6'5 range.
Yeah, they're just slender.
They're really thin. They're lanky individuals.
Yeah,
especially Orton. Orton yeah. has just long limbs. Yeah. And so him doing the RKO to shorter guys like Joey and Jamie of J&J Security, they were able to sell it differently than you'd see most people sell them. So I did enjoy seeing those happen. But that big win, and I mean, spoilers, Seth Rollins is the champion. So you have such a big toss-up of, you know, Roman should get a shot, Lesnar should get a shot, Randy should get a shot. Like, you've got a fatal four-way basic mix-up type thing of potential challengers who have a legitimate claim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the good thing about the booking of the event, and we should probably talk about that more when we get to the main event. But I like how this sort of preset that up with Orton beating him.
Absolutely. Following that up, a big match, WCW versus WWE,
huge
NWO
match.
Versus DX, Triple H versus Sting. And a bit odd that the last week leading up to it, Triple H kind of became the face, at least in my eyes. Like,
I still don't understand that. Like, such a heel, but you're son, face.
I watch it, and, like, you're talking, and you're all like, you know, I'm not doing it for WCW, I'm doing it because, you know, you shouldn't be in power. It's like, well, who the hell are you to decide that, Sting? Like, you just barely came over. And like, yeah, Stephanie was about to slap him, but, like, he goes and he, like, grabs her hand and he's, like, holding it and she's, like, wincing in pain and Triple H comes out and he's looking at his wife and he's like, did he touch you? Did he hit you? And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, yeah, fuck that guy, Triple H. Kick his ass.
The way I see it, I don't understand, like, the Stephanie thing where she's like, especially with The Rock, like, she slapped him, you know, or, like, Sting. She like, slaps all these people, and then she's like, you won't hit a woman, right? It's like, nah, son. If you hit a guy, it's open season. Like, like, why did you hit him? Like, if you don't want to get hit, don't hit the man. Like,
that's a Stone Cold mentality to me. Like Steve Austin seems like one of those guys where if she slapped him, it's like, okay, stunner.
Yeah, yeah. Like, which again, like, I think it's one of those reasons why he was so over when he would hit anyone. Like, I think if the Pope slapped Stone Cold for being, you know, Stone Cold, like, there would be a stunner to the Pope, and he would get a pop. You know, like. Like, so if Stephanie's gonna slap people around,
I don't know about all this Stone Cold being more over than the Pope, because the Pope broke WrestleMania 3's indoor attendance record for the Pontiac Silverdome, brother. The Pope is strong.
The Pope, that was John Pope II, though. Like, we had a heel Pope, so I mean the Pope brand name is
we're saying if that was Benedict.
Oh, if it was Benedict,
if he stunned Benedict, Uber cheers heel. Everywhere.
Oh, dude, yeah. Like, I think even Catholics in Rome would be going like, yes.
In the Vatican, they're like, finally.
Yeah, finally, someone stunned him. We've been praying for that stun.
You see it written into the Bible, Austin 3:16 is officially canonized.
Yeah, canonized, like, right after Revelations. Like, it comes after, canon-wise, like. And in a sea of crowds, we saw that they were cheering, and we saw 3:16 says, I just whooped your ass. But yeah, the whole thing with Sting, like, to me, such a face, like, they tried making it about WCW versus WWE, and I think at one point, I don't know if it was Sting or the commentary or someone said, like, this is not WWE versus WCW because that fight is over. Like I think it's Sting, actually. He's like, that would be stupid because, like, yeah, he's like, that would be stupid because, like, we lost that fight. Like it's done. But Triple H sort of made it into that, kind of. Because, you know, that's the only, that was sort of, like, the only way he could, like, twist this to go into his favor. Because otherwise, like, this is a guy who's been basically, like, a proto-version of Vince McMahon. Like, the guy in charge that's abusing his power.
But
and, you know,
in
he's got
this
Stephanie.
Match, he was the face.
Like, I don't see it. There's nothing face about a guy who abuses his power.
running into this other guy's company. Like, tries to ruin matches, like, attacks him unprovoked, like, no words happen to Sting. Sting just comes out. First thing he does ever see in Triple H is he gives him the damn reverse DDT. I'm sorry, I just can't stand for that. Sting's breaking in like some sort of vigilante.
I think,
trying to bring out all this justice.
Commissioner
Gordon on this business.
When you're a face and someone does this to you, sure, like, I would argue of that, but when you're a heel and all you've done for, how long has the authority been like a thing, like an actual angle?
About a year and a half.
No, it's gotta be the authority has been going on for longer than a year, way longer than a year. Like, there's
if we're talking about like the infancy of the authority,
yes,
like
when
they started going around, then it goes all the way back to the McMahon Helmsley era in like 2001.
No, come
on. Like,
let's not get too crazy with it. Like,
you want to get crazy? I'll be loco. Right?
Yeah. Okay. I found it. The authority, like with the logo, with the video and everything. August 19, 2013. It's 2015. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
there we go.
Year and a half ago. Learn math.
Like, no, that seems like it's getting close to 2 years now. No, I can't.
Anyways,
no.
I didn't know going into this match that it was going to be pinfall or submission only, basically a no DQ match.
I think that happened.
I think that was announced just at the spur of the moment.
It must have been because I don't remember. I really don't remember that being announced anywhere.
That
that unannounced appearance of DX and NWO, though. That was
And again, just to clarify, the people watching the broadcast only, the thunderous pop for both NWO coming out and DX coming out was deafening. I could not even think straight because of how loud that stadium was. 76,000 people screaming for NWO and DX. And mind you, this when they brought out DX, it wasn't, you know, the good DX. Like, they were being bad guys in this particular scenario. And they were still getting a pop. And when the NWO came out, another massive pop. I mean, I'm pretty sure just the sound, like the pop, almost, you know, tore Kevin Nash's quads. You know, like...
Yeah, the sound was very loud, and seeing them both going through, battling against each other was excellent. I mean, people like you, who had never been to a big live event, gotten a chance to see these people in their heyday. Like, they got to see their first pay-per-view. They got to have DX. They got to see NWO, Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels, like, completely unannounced, not knowing these people are going to be there. That's such a huge deal to be able to see that.
Oh, yeah, for me, because I've never seen, like, I've never been to a pay-per-view live, never been to a WrestleMania, never seen, like, Hulk, like, I've never seen the big names, like Hulk Hogan, Sting, Undertaker, like, the entirety of the NWO. I think I've seen DX before, but I've never seen a lot of these personalities, so for me, this was kind of like everyone came out. Like, even The Rock appeared. Like, I think the only thing I needed at this particular WrestleMania to happen was to see Stone Cold, and I would have been, but that's it. I got everything. I literally have every single person I need in my list of people that I needed to see.
Yeah, because we even got Piper, Steamboat, Bret Hart.
And granted, they were backstage, but they were still there. And we saw them in Axis, so there's that.
Well, I did.
I saw Steamboat. I was there for Steamboat. Calm down.
You didn't shake.
I got the signature of the only person that mattered at Axis, all right? Finn frickin' Balor, all right?
Oh, you mean that guy who ripped off...
the Boogeyman's entrance?
Boogeyman's entrance. Nice.
Nicely done.
Can't happen.
Oh, man. But anyway, Triple H versus Sting. Before we go into, like, the crazy, like, very basic match as far as, like, moveset, and I mean, this is a 50-something-year-old versus a... How old is Triple H? He's got to be
43?
Close to 50. Yeah, he's in his 40s, so, I mean, good match for for one guy who's not, like, a 24/7 wrestler, and for a guy who's kind of over, you know, he's over that age range where they have to slow down.
But
decent match,
man,
good tempo.
Sting looked good for
Sting.
Six?
Yeah, Sting didn't look his age. Like, he looked like he was in his 40s, not his 50s.
And he had the sweetest jacket. Like, Ric Flair had to be fuming that Sting came out with a better jacket than he ever had. Man, that jacket was amazing.
That jacket was pretty bright, though. Like, blood red from our seats. Blood red.
And that entrance for Triple H... When the Terminators rose up and then he came out holding the skulls of like 10 freaking Terminators.
Yeah, I know on the broadcast a lot of people shit on it and like a lot of people are like, I don't understand it. All I know is that at Levi Stadium on that day, Terminator WWE became a thing and people were marking out loudly for those Terminators. Loudly. So I don't know.
I loved it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I was marking out. I'm pretty sure I said, what is happening right now? Multiple times during the match.
No, I said, what is happening, like, right now. As soon as DX came out, I'm like, what the fuck?
And then with NWO, I was like, what?
I, like, checked my watch. I was like, did Doctor Who just visit WrestleMania? Like, NWO?
Is there
like,
a TARDIS of the Gorilla?
Month? Like, who's next? The Midnight Express?
Let's be fair. The gentleman from DX and from NWO all look pretty good in pretty good shape. Like if there's one person that looked like, okay, like, he might have a stroke, was Razor Ramon. I forgot his name. Scott Hall. Probably the only one that didn't look all there. And still, he you know, nothing happened. You know, obviously, it's fine.
I like how the NWO guys, like, being bigger stars in their prime than any of those DX guys ever were booked that they just immediately beat the crap out of the DX guys. But, like, you look at them and you think about it logically, and you're like, the DX guys are in way better shape. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Like,
Billy Gunn still looks really good. And
Billy Gunn
meanwhile, like, Kevin Nash went down, and I'm like, please, dear God, I hope he didn't tear a quad. Like,
in the broadcast, I'm telling you right now, if you haven't seen the broadcast, he looks like he tore his quad. I can't make this up. As soon as he falls,
Nash is down.
And when Nash falls, he favors that area, like, and he's selling it like death.
He has to know his reputation and, like, kind of play it up, though,
probably.
When he's doing an angle. Like, he seems like that kind of guy, because he's such a funny person that he would get a giggle out of something like that, like being quad.
Yeah. Oops.
The Shawn Michaels spot, though, like, Shawn Michaels came in like such a chameleon. Like, I didn't even see him like run down the ramp or anything. Like,
no,
I'm not
he
sure
came
how
from
he
the crowd. He came from the crowd.
But
he came from the crowd.
He just hopped in and he's in the corner and it's like, oh my God, Shawn Michaels is gonna super kick Sting. Like, I wanted Shawn Michaels to be the one to fight Sting, like, from 2005. Like,
right. Since that would have been another
dream. That was a match I wanted to see. I still want to see that. That's a dream match for me.
Bringing him out of retirement for one match.
Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I'm with you on that one. Like if we're going to have, like, two more Sting matches, I still want my Taker one because, duh. And at least either Shawn Michaels or maybe not The Rock, but I really think, like, Stone Cold Sting would be another dream match since, you know, that era, that was them, right? Like,
they were the two most over guys in 95 to 98.
Like, when you think of, like, 1999 or 1997, WWE and 1997, WCW, those are the two faces that you think of.
Yep. I gotta say, though, man, I honestly think after Monday, we have to see Sting versus Bo Dallas in a proper match.
You want that Bo Dallas match?
You
really do. Oh my God. But yeah, great match. So, amazing pieces of the puzzle.
Triple H got the win with half of a sledgehammer with a knockout Sting. I thought it was a bit strange that Sting shook his hand afterwards.
Yeah.
Like,
I
respect the burying of the hatchet between WCW and WWE, which I got that, but, like, the you cheated better than I did type of thing was a bit odd.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, like, I understand if it was, like...
It was really big of Triple H to shake hands, because Triple H was the face.
I understand... There you go. You're no-selling it like you know Sokaku. I don't understand... Oops. I don't understand, like, in this particular scenario, why they felt they needed to do the whole shake the hand spot at the end. Because, like, Triple H, both as a character, even when he's a good guy, like, that's not him. Much less when he's, like, the authority. And, like, nothing changed. Like not even 20 minutes later or, like, 30 minutes later, an hour, whatever. My concept of time during WrestleMania was kind of iffy. I don't understand why... I don't understand why they thought it would be a good idea for him to do that. You know? Like, it doesn't fit his character. It doesn't fit him in story. Like, an hour later, he's shitting all over the crowd, you know? Like, and Sting. So, like, I don't get the point of that spot. And think everyone's mentioned.
I feel like I beat 76,956 people today.
Yeah. I just don't understand it.
I own each and every one of you. Well, you don't own The Rock. That was such a great entrance. Like, completely unexpected, The Rock comes out and delivers a thrilling promo on them. Again, they tease, like they teased a few months back, one final Triple H versus The Rock match, which we gotta be sure is a major headliner for WrestleMania 32. And then the moment of moments, I can't even say it. What happened? Who did The Rock bring out?
The Rock brought out,
I'm too high,
the carrier of the Conqueror's hockey. The toughest woman in the planet herself, Ronda freaking Rousey. Like, what?
Ronda Rousey was shown in the front row, and I have been praying that she would be there. Then she hops over the ring, comes into the ring. The Rock sells her as, you know, if you didn't know, this is the baddest woman on the planet. And that look means she's going to play jump rope with your fallopian tubes. I honestly don't know how The Rock comes up off the cuff with such fantastic, because they don't feel written. I get that he's a great actor, but like, they feel like so off the cuff. Like, he's such a natural talker that I'm always amazed by his promo ability. Like, in my opinion, the greatest talker of all time, The Rock. Building that up and that spot where she grabs Stephanie by the arm and holds her. I mean, that's what everybody was talking about on social media, the news, like Ronda Rousey, Ronda Rousey, Ronda Rousey, Ronda Rousey.
Like, oh, that crowd popped for Ronda. Like, when they seen her, when they were just Ronda's saying, like, oh, look who's
gonna kill
you. There was a little Ronda's gonna
kill you. Oh, man. The crowd was very hot for it. And I like it when the crowd and the setup come together at the exact right moment. Like, just when they're beginning to tease it and the crowd gets it. Because, like, they showed Ronda Rousey earlier in the night, but they always show when a celebrity's there. Mm-hmm. So seeing that, and right when, you know, The Rock's like, you know, I won't hit a woman, and he leaves the ring type thing. Like,
oh, yeah,
the crowd, like, little by little, they all got it and everything. It's like,
yeah, I knew as soon as the slap happened, and, you know, there was, like, Rock and then two, you know, Rock alone, two other people on the other side, and she does the slap, and he didn't do anything. I was like, oh, I know who's going to come and, like, get retribution for that slap.
Yeah.
The writing was on the wall.
Incredible seeing that. I mean, just fantastic. And I'm such a huge Ronda Rousey fan that I loved seeing it more than anyone else, I believe. Like,
you've probably watched that a few times.
I have.
I don't doubt it.
A lot.
just keep watching WrestleMania, but only for that spot. Like, you're like, oh, there's matches? Like, oh, I didn't even know. Greatest WrestleMania of all time. Didn't even know there was matches.
It was great even without the Ronda Rousey, but that brought it to an even higher level.
Yeah.
The one weaker match on the card, and it was still a good match, a very good match.
Arguably the weakest.
Paige fought the Bellas.
Yeah, arguably the weakest. Actually, yeah, this is the weakest, but it's weird. It's not weak. It's not weak because it's a Divas match. It's weak for two reasons. One, it's a tag match, which is pointless. Like, I've already talked about this out in Asia. Like, it's a pointless to have a tag match in a division that has no tag team titles. Pointless, right? And then also because it's only 6 minutes long. Like, it was shorter. It's the shortest match in the card, including the kickoff, you know, the pre-WrestleMania kickoff show. Like, it's such a short match, 6 minutes. Like, by the time it gets into second gear, it's dead. Like, it's already over. And I have to wonder, now that we know AJ retired on, what was it, Friday? Is that when she retired? The Friday after WrestleMania? So I have to wonder if that had to do with why the match was so short, because AJ barely did anything in this match.
She pretty much just went in, did the Black Widow, and won.
Yeah, exactly. But I also have to think that the Rock...
the story behind this match, the Rock probably ran long.
Which also probably had something to do with Undertaker Bray Wyatt, which I'll get to that later.
Yeah. So, Nikki is the Divas champion. And she's been pretty much set up that she can't be beat in the fact that she's pretty good. She's got her sister by her side at all her matches. And she will cheat. She's willing to cheat. So the faces can't get that. So, like, she beat Paige because she rolled up the tights and Paige, you know, turned into a whiny child afterwards with the whole, my tights and everything. I don't like that Uber baby face.
Yeah.
it especially doesn't fit Paige. It especially doesn't fit Paige. She's the anti-diva and all that. Like, she's supposed to be, like, the hard one. And then AJ had lost to her, too. So they came together to fight the Bellas because it's finally going to be even ground. Like, they're not going to have an advantage, and they were able to beat them. But my problem with it is, what does that do? It doesn't get the title off of Nikki. It doesn't change that the next time one of them gets a one-on-one match with Nikki, Bree's still going to be there unless they can finally get stuff together. Like, they showed that they didn't get stuff together on the Raw before Mania when Paige lost in her title match because, you know, AJ cost her, and then AJ and her, like, ended up fighting, and that was buried by the time they got to Raw, to WrestleMania, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Like, there was just a lot of back and forth, and it just served no purpose. It wasn't bad. It just served no purpose.
Yeah, and again, like, I'll say it until I'm red in the face. A tag match in a Divas division makes no sense. Like, I'm gonna say that until I'm blue in the face. I don't care how good your story is. I really don't. Like, you're gonna have the best, like, NXT comes to mind. NXT has great angles under Divas division. The minute you put a tag match, as good as the match is, in the back of my head, I'm always like, this is pointless. Like, this is pointless. Like, I can't get invested in it. Just can't. Like, NXT had I'm pretty sure there was a tag team Divas match, or women's match, over at NXT San Jose, right? Like, that was the match before Charlotte versus Sasha Banks, right? Or am I imagining that?
Yeah, it was a women's tag match. It was
It was a great match. I remember being a great match. Bailey.
It was Dana and Bailey versus
Alexa Bliss. Oh, Bliss and Bailey. It was Bliss and Bailey.
Yeah, it was Bliss and Bailey versus Dana and Becky Lynch.
Yeah, and again, not a bad match. Great match. The crowd was hot. I was into it, but in the back of my head, I was like, there's no ramifications to what happens here. And that's the same way I feel about this match. It's a good match for what it is. It wasn't given enough time, I think. But at the end of the day, a pointless match.
Yeah, it wasn't given nearly enough time. I agree with that for sure. But it was good. It just, to me, the story at the end of the day, like, it didn't resolve anything or really help anything. But I love that it came the night after Medusa, Alundra Blaze, gave that incredible acceptance speech, where she pulled out the women's title and said, oh, look at this. It's a women's wrestling belt.
Like, yes. I love that.
Belt is a term Vince hates. Like, wrestling is a term Vince hates.
And mm-hmm.
She's like, women's wrestling
belt.
Like,
love that.
Straight up. And I hope that that's a sign that we're getting the women's title back to replace the Divas title. And you know what? Whether it's, you know, Charlotte, the natural, genetically superior, or Sasha, the Boss Banks, or Bailey hug machine, like whoever does it, one of them is going to come up and be a star. Like,
nice. I really think they could benefit from that. Like, if that ever happened, like, just bring the. I think with Medusa, Alundra Blaze, whatever you want to call her, being so fresh in everyone's head right now, they missed the opportunity to trash the Divas title and bring back the women's title. But hopefully that's in the like in their minds, because I really, really don't like to call them Divas. Female wrestlers. I don't like the diva thing. And I don't like the way it looks. Like, it's a stupid belt. It's a really stupid belt. Or title, whatever you want to call it.
Speaking of stupid belts, the U.S. Championship is on his waist at the cost of a great career. I'm a little sad. I'm a little sad.
Yeah. Okay, before you go in, can we talk about how great Rusev's entrance was? Like, before you mention anything.
It was a tank. Loser was riding the tank, came out.
Loser was... Don't sell it like that,
though. He had a whole bunch of, you know, soldiers at his side. He had a beautiful woman holding the belt like she was from Rocky III, and then he was a loser.
I think this is the moment where, like, your energy was seeped out of WrestleMania.
Like, John Cena, like, stole my joy, like the Grinch just climbing down the chimney.
And this is coming out of the mouth of a person who's a legitimate John Cena fan. Like, that's what needs to be understood about
this whole thing. I like John Cena. I love John Cena. He should not have won, though. Like, I don't understand how you missed the opportunity that for the first time since winning the title, he could have tapped out at WrestleMania and, like, shocked a crowd and really made that title matter so much more than him holding it would. Like, right. Like, John Cena holding the U.S. Championship brings it from the 5 it was at to a 7, sure. Right. But the dude who's tapped out John Cena holding
would
the title
have been
would have brought
10.
It to a 10.
Exactly. Or 11 even, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'd be sitting there, I'd be like, wait, so, like, Rusev is as strong as Brock Lesnar? Like, that would be all I could take away, because Brock Lesnar didn't tap out Cena. I mean, he didn't try, but he didn't. Like,
yeah,
made Cena tap.
Yeah, I don't understand. I'm trying to figure out, like, how to say this without sounding, like, hateful towards Cena. And it's not hate at this point. I don't understand why, for the past 10 years, whatever you want to call it, they've tried building these heels, like, as monsters. Like, you get Umaga, you get, you know, Rusev, you get Muhammad Hassan. You get all these heels that, like, they try to establish.
Ryback.
Right, like, you have all these... shit, forgot about Chris Masters. That's right, because I remember when they broke the hold, it was done in a Raw. Like, I don't understand why you put so much time and effort into these characters, like, 1, 2, 3 year programs, and then just be like, oh, Cena's going to beat them. And it's like, okay, cool. Cena beats them, but here's the problem. Cena ain't going anywhere. Like he's in the company for life. Like, he's probably going to become a road agent or something. Guaranteed Hall of Fame spot. Like, John Cena is a made man. He's been a made man since, what, 2005? Right?
No, 2007.
When did he beat JBL?
2005.
He was made. Made.
That day, his career
The day...
I think he was solidified 2007.
He was solidified, but I think he was made. Like, in the eye... Like, the way JBL's title reign was done... Like, do you remember who JBL beat during his title reign? Like, do you remember the people he beat? Or you're not remembering. Huh? Eddie, Undertaker, like, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, or not Brock, sorry. He beat, like, everyone that was...
Wait, he beat Taker?
Yes!
I did not remember that. Oh, yeah. He did! That's right!
Do you, like, okay, like I understand this was a while ago, but, like, I'm explaining to you that when Cena beat JBL, that was a passing of the torch moment. Like it was a big, and it was the WWE belt. It wasn't the World Heavyweight Championship, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, this was a big deal.
It wasn't
a
WWE champ.
Exactly. So, he was made. Like, he has, like, what I thought they were going to do with Roman Reigns this year was what they did with JBL that day, with Cena. They established JBL as someone who, I mean, yeah, obviously he was a chicken shit heel, and he was beating people with underhanded tactics and, an authority type thing with the cabinet. Whatever. He was still a guy who, for a year, people paid to see him get beat. No one could beat him. John Cena beats him cleanly, with no question, and he just gets made. And then they have that great match at Judgment Day, gets made. John Cena has been made since then, I think. Then they feed him to, Jericho, Edge, and, he has these great matches and the great feuds, whatever. All these monsters that they've been trying to establish over the years can never make it to anything because they get fed to Cena, and then they're wondering, like, how come we can't create new stars? Well, the stars that you try to create, you implode them and have them swallowed up by the supernova that is Cena. And that's what happened to Rusev. Rusev could have been, like, a big deal, like a big deal heel. He could have been the new Iron Sheik, easily. With the way, I mean, you have the Russian angle, which, again, Russia right now is, like, a real-life heel country, like, politically. You have him do the accolade, which is really the fucking, the camel clutch. And you had the angle with the great American champ, great American wrestler, fighter, whatever you want to call it. Like, they could have made Rusev into, without even giving him the World Heavyweight Championship, they could have made him into a big deal. And they failed. Because they wanted to protect Cena. Way too much protection on Cena.
And there's no need to protect him. It should have been Rusev. I honestly don't see the value of him holding it. And I mean, especially like the next night, I'm going to defend it. Rusev doesn't come out and immediately go for his rematch. He beats up Goldust?
What was that all about? Yeah.
You're stronger than Goldust? Like, you're not undefeated anymore? Like, what? You're garbage. Get out of the way.
The character is ruined. He's not undefeated. Doesn't have the title.
Like,
Lana,
now he's like a sore bully. Rusev just becomes a sore bully. Cena, like, stays as Cena. Now he's got a title. He beats up Dean Ambrose, who... Wow, that was the worst freaking SCF I've ever seen in my life.
That was.
That was bad. Like,
yeah. You're not gonna get a disagreement from me. Like, that was.
Yeah. I didn't get the comments I kept seeing sent at me. Oh my gosh, that pay-per-view quality match of Cena versus Ambrose. I was like, the one where the Looney Tune Gumbied around his body? Like, I don't even know what that was. Like, just humped his leg for a couple of seconds. It was just lame.
Yeah. It was pretty horrible, though.
Yeah, that was bad. But Cena, I mean, it was a good match. Don't get me wrong. Cena versus Rusev was a very good match. And, I mean, they both look strong. There's that little bit, I guess, of credibility that they left with Rusev, that he was concerned about Lana, and then he, just immediately healed out on Lana when he finally realized he had lost. But it's just not enough, and the turn occurred that day that I turned on John Cena.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. They have a plan that we're not privy to, and I really think they dropped the ball. At the same time, Vince McMahon is super patriotic, and WrestleMania having his United States champion, like, be the Russian guy, I think his old man mentality of, like, no, well, this has to come back to America, got the best out of him.
But at the same time, like, he could have had, you know, Cena go down like Bob Backlund did, so that he could build the new star. Like, he built Hulkamania on the Sheik's back. Like, so why couldn't he build, I don't know, Ziggler-mania or frickin'... Who's somebody who hasn't fought Rusev yet that could go up there? Stardust-mania. Like, that could have happened.
Is that what we're doing?
I wish. But, I mean, most likely I would have said that it should have been Bryan or Roman Reigns should have ended Rusev's run. Like, he should have gotten past Cena, and then Bryan or Roman did it. I would have liked to see either of those. I would have really liked to see Wade Barrett retain. I think Wade Barrett, like, in a unification match, beating him could have been a nice over thing for him. That would have been a big turn. Because I don't know. I really think Wade Barrett should be higher on the card than he normally is. He's a pretty believable champion.
Yeah.
So, earlier in the night, some rumors came out that Bray Wyatt injured himself.
Which turns out to be true.
For the match. And he sprained his ankle. And in my opinion, that made my respect for this match go way up when I found out that it was confirmed. Because Bray and Taker wrestled a very good match.
They did. Now,
before
we get into that, two things about this match. And within my WrestleMania high, like, of being live there, there's two things that I sort of, like, completely skipped over. The match just started. Like the what was it? John Cena beats Rusev. They show on the graphic, like, that the next match is Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt. There's no pre-hype promo, right? Like, there's no pre-hype promo. They don't show Bray Wyatt running the promos, Undertaker accepting the challenge. They don't show Undertaker, like, versus Brock Lesnar. Like, there's absolutely no pre-story to start the match. And this out of all the matches in the card, I would argue, this is probably the one that had the most story going on, because, I mean, they've never met, right? It's completely storyline driven. No video package, nothing.
Yeah, it's completely based on... It was entirely based on Bray selling this match. Like,
right.
Taker didn't do any work.
Like, when you watch the broadcast, and when we were there, I think I might have mentioned, like, huh, that was pretty fast. And then it didn't click that there was no video package. And then later I was like, oh my god, like, there was no video package. And I think it was because of the Rock segment maybe going too long. Maybe another match went longer than it should have. I don't know. But I think, I don't know if someone forgot. Like, it doesn't take away from the match, mind you. I just think... seeing it, like, as a production, like, as a story, you know, being told and whatever, it kind of fails now that I rewatch it. The match is still great, but the story being told is, there's no story, basically. And I think they fail. Like, if you go back to this years, like, 5 years from now, you're not going to know why they're fighting. Make sense?
Because of the lack of package. Like, we know because we watched the Raws leading up, but you're talking about just on that aspect. I can see that. But I think just the spectacle of the characters, the in-ring performance and the entrance is enough to sell the match to me that, oh, this is why they're fighting, is because they're both incredible dark creatures. Like, Bray Wyatt's entrance is my favorite entrance I have seen in years. Like, I loved this entrance. Everything about it.
I think outside that, of my markdom for Finn Balor, yes.
Selling. No. Finn Balor. Ugh. Out. Loving.
Done.
When he has a WrestleMania entrance, maybe. Maybe. But unless he's got crows coming to life.
Scarecrows, like, yeah.
Scarecrows coming to life at the light of his lantern and his faith-healing touch, then he ain't ready for Bray Wyatt. Because Bray Wyatt, oh my god, like, this entire thing was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scarecrows, like, the way these actors did the choreography was like they were literally animated with life. And woke up from being stiff. Like, it was, oh my god.
So I love that the faith healer aspect has not been taken away from the character. Because when I first saw Bray Wyatt in a house show, he came out preaching. Like, he was talking about how his hand, like, the hand that has the weird half glove on it is supposed to be his healing hand. Like, that was the gift from Sister Abigail. Like, you know, this is how he will heal the WWE Universe. Da, 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 da. Like, he uses that still. Like, they don't play it as much as they did before, especially in house shows, but the subtleties of it, like, and especially, like, in the entrance, not so subtle, you know, like, he's bringing the dead back to life with his hands, which as a character, like, it's pretty out there. Like, he is on par with Undertaker as far as, like, what the hell are these characters doing wrestling? Like, they're superheroes, supervillains.
Just in the entrance, you see Bray come out, bring lifeless and inanimate objects to life, is what we're being told. And then Taker comes out, and you see the emblem reading all across the stadium, never summon the dead.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, he's sitting there, he's blaspheming, he's rising all these things to life and everything like that, laughing his way, and then here comes, you know, the demon himself.
Right.
The Undertaker, risen up, and he's going to claim him. And Bray, you know, battles back and forth with him. He's got Taker down. He crab walks over. He's mocking him. He's got the talking and tons of laughing. And then Taker sits up and locks eyes with him. And the stare that he gives him just causes Bray to collapse. Like, that collapse, Bray, everything was in his eyes when he just crumpled down like a spider that just got, like, squished. Like, he just completely crumpled up, like, rolled over onto his stomach, like defeated right at that moment from the stare. Like, he got hit with Conqueror's spirit, right?
I love that, yeah. Like, I still, if I watch that match, I only watch, like, two or three spots if I'm not watching the whole thing. And the crab walk into the, you know, the Undertaker, what do they call it? The sit-up, I guess? Like, I don't know if there's an official name for that thing.
But, name it, the revival.
Yeah, like, that part, that particular part shot so well. Like, whoever was the cameraman for that shot, that guy was on point. Like, he was on the right spot at the right time. Like he got it. He got the shot. Like, to me, the whole match,
right place,
the whole match could be just summarized in that spot right there. Like him trying to be the face of fear, trying to, like, psych out Taker, and then Taker just being Taker and completely overtaking him. Like, and he realizes, like, oh, I might have bitten more than I chewed.
I like that you just said the Undertaker overtook.
Huh? Huh?
I just like that imagery.
You like that? You like that wordplay? No.
that was well crafted. That was
well, like a word.
Applause to you, sir. Applause to you, sir. You're a regular Shel Silverstein right there.
I'm a fucking poet, and I didn't even know it.
Way to fuck up the easiest rhyme in the world.
Right?
Oh, man. But we leave the land of the dead and the faith healers, and we enter a glorious land, a metropolis, some might say, a metropolis known only as Suplex City.
Suplex City, bitch.
Suplex City, bitch. Suplex City, bitch.
I love that.
There are so many remixes of Brock Lesnar saying Suplex City Bitch turned into rap songs that I have filled my iPod up with that.
Have you really?
I have at least three.
Nice.
And they're all really good.
Very nice.
Oh my god. Brock Lesnar is a beast. Like, absolute monster. And the perfect man to rumble with monsters is Roman Reigns. Setting the scene, coming out first is Roman Reigns. And, you know, we saw him speak at Access, and the boos were powerful. When he came out, the boos were all over the place. And I have been on Roman's side. Like, I mean, we called that back in September, I believe, in our first episode, that it was going to be Roman versus Brock at WrestleMania, and indeed it was. But predictable doesn't mean bad. Predictable doesn't mean forced. And predictable doesn't mean he's not the right man.
Yeah, we've said that it's not so much knowing the end game, it's the ride getting there. Right?
Yep.
Like, we've preached this a couple of times in the show. And I'll be damned, booing aside of Roman Reigns that happened, I mean, everyone can hate on him for whatever reason it is that they're hating him. Because I'm still not understanding the actual hate that Roman gets. And anyone that says, oh, he can't wrestle, he's not a good wrestler, whatever. Neither was Hogan, you know, Cena, arguably. Like, there's a lot of people that are not great wrestlers, but they're great The Rock, for God's sakes. The Rock is not a great wrestler. He's not a technical tactician. He's just a great character. It's the only reason why he was over, like, in the 90s, because he was a great character. Like to say that Roman Reigns can't get there when after the performance on Sunday is folly. Complete and utter folly.
I wouldn't quite say that Roman's not a great wrestler. I mean, Roman's very good. I mean, he's very good. And Cena's very good. Hogan was a good showman. Rock was a great showman. And a very
Rock was the greatest showman. let's be clear on that.
but what really just came across in this was you got to see, I don't know if it was an embracing or a perversion of Paul Heyman's words, because Paul Heyman said in the same breath, praise and bile against Roman Reigns in his promos.
Yeah.
You know, when he was saying
against Sammartino.
Sammartino, against Austin, against Hogan, against
Macho
the
Man.
Rock, against Macho Man, against whoever Austin. You put him up against.
Against Cena, he even said.
My money is on Roman Reigns. But against Brock Lesnar, no, and everything. And then he says, you know, and this family of thugs that are two generations removed from cannibal, like, would go out and they would point at people, the strongest men in the room, and say, fight or you don't go home, and all these things. And Roman kind of proved some of those true. He laughed at Brock Lesnar. Like,
yeah,
Brock
I think
Lesnar beating him, and he laughed because he loves being in the fight. He lives in there. He said in an interview afterwards, he's like, I went to Suplex City. I survived Suplex City. I actually liked it there. I'm thinking of buying a condo.
Yeah, like he
in Suplex City. Like
what I like the most about what happened there, like the way they booked him to, I mean, he took a beating, right? Like they booked him to absolutely be crucified. The same way John Cena was crucified at SummerSlam. Here's the main difference of why it worked better this time than it did then. When Brock Lesnar beat John Cena, he just beat him. Like, suplexed him, what was it, 16 times or something? 16 times he gets suplexed. I don't know how many F5s he took. No offense. And then he's dead. It's over. And he comes on Raw the next day, and he's like, you know, I got my ass beat. I need to fix this. But he still was like, you know, like he got destroyed during the match. Not once did John Cena laugh at the face of the Beast Unleashed. Roman Reigns, while we're getting slapped hard way, was laughing at him. When he was getting suplexed, he was laughing at him. Like, the whole match, he's getting beat, he's laughing at Brock, basically taunting him, but still providing offense back, because he still fought back. Like, throughout the match, he does, like, a couple, you know, he gets some offense out.
As soon as the match started, Brock was bleeding from the very start of the match. I mean,
mm-hmm.
30 seconds in, he hit the F5, but he was already bleeding from the scratches and punches that he'd taken. And I mean, he dominated Roman Reigns. Don't get me wrong. Like, he beat the absolute hell out of Roman Reigns.
Which is fine, because it's Brock.
it showed the resilience and power of Roman Reigns while not diminishing the striking and deviousness, vicious ferocity of the Beast.
I think a lot of people missed the point of what was going on in that match. Like they were showing you A, that Brock is still dominant, and B, Roman Reigns can take it easily from Brock. So if he can take it from Brock, like, that means that anyone else, he's just gonna shrug off, basically.
Yeah, like, Roman became a human pain bullet, like, just like a sponge for pain and everything.
Yeah.
He got beat up bad.
I still love the how many F5s did we count? Four?
Four F5s.
Yeah, four F5s, and then followed after the fourth F5 or third, I can't remember. That's when came the three Superman punches, you know, all over the ring. Boom, boom, boom. And then two spears. And we almost got to finish.
Yeah, he chased the corner. And, you know, he chased the corners, doing the three Superman punches, did the two spears, and Brock still kicked out. Like, that's the amazing thing about it, is Brock still kicked out of it. They kept battling after that, and he hits another F5.
And then
both men are laying down, beaten, and then out comes your new WWE reigning, defending, undisputed WWE champion, Seth Rollins.
Yep. Who,
a tremendous cash in.
Who made history?
Yes, the only
history making cash in
at WrestleMania. The only cash in that took place during a match to
change
the structure of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like he inserted himself in a match. He didn't go like, okay, like Lesnar just beat Reigns, I'm gonna cash in on the weekend Lesnar, or Reigns just beat Lesnar, I'm gonna cash in on the weekend Reigns.
Right, like there's
no, like I'm gonna go
something
in at this moment, like,
yeah, there's something almost tweenish about what he did, because like when Edge would do it, you know, Edge cashed in what, twice, maybe three times, like I can't remember. It just seems like he cashed more. Yeah, when he did it, he would always do it, you know, like after a match was done, you know, when Cena or whoever was like at their weakest, and then he would cash in. Same with CM Punk. CM Punk did a cash in when someone was at their weakest after a match. Seth Rollins could have waited as a heel, in the way he's been booked the entire time. He could have been the type of heel who would have waited until someone was dead on the ground, and he could have, you know, then taken the kill. Because he's beaten Roman Reigns before, right? Like, he beat him on, what, a Monday ago? 2 Mondays ago? Like,
wow.
What was it?
Yep.
Yeah, so he already knows he can beat him. So he could have just waited and then, you know, done the cash-in. But to actually insert himself into a match in a triple threat, from a character standpoint and from a story standpoint, very tricky, very risky for him to do that. But he was confident enough that he could get this happen, that he could make himself become the champ by having both of them in the match like that. So it makes him less of a...
Here's the thing I love about how he cashed in. He cashed in when both men were at their weakest, so that he could still have that capitalizing without worrying about, you know, one of them recovering or getting on a hot streak in the match.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was more heelish to me. But I love the fact that he comes into the ring, he sees Roman Reigns is down, he sees Brock Lesnar is down. And who does he kick out of the ring? Like, I don't want any of this guy right now.
Roman Reigns. Yeah, he sold Brock Lesnar like whatever. Like, I can beat him, but Roman Reigns? Nah, son, I don't want nothing to do with that guy.
Yeah, he's like, Brock, I've cracked ribs on this guy. Like, I felt it. I could get him.
Yeah.
But Roman?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
No.
And which I love.
One hell of a curb stomp on Brock, and goes for a second curb stomp, and the freaking Beast picks him up for an F5, only to get speared. Here's where it gets tricky. Rollins is so much of a cat as a human being, that when Lesnar is speared, holding him for the F5, he jumps off, lands on his feet, and is already popping off the rope so that he can curb stomp Roman Reigns. Like, it was such a great moment. Like, the best triple threat ending of hits since WrestleMania 24's, you know, pedigree into the punt into the pin for Orton. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was such a great assemblage that you saw it all falling together, and Rollins got that belt and runs away. Like, as a heel, a cowardly heel, he's won the belt, got the quick swoop, runs away, and then the two monsters get up, and they're sitting on each side of the ring. And Roman, who's been laughing at Brock Lesnar, is now weeping.
Yeah, openly weeping.
At the loss to Seth Rollins on one side of the ring, and on the other side, you see Brock sitting there like, the hell happened?
The hell just happened,
this
yeah.
This is bullshit. Like, yeah.
I like, there's two things, and maybe this is the inner Vegeta fan in me, but like, there's something kind of like Prince of Saiyan-esque that's going on with Roman Reigns, the way they sold him, like, he's fighting someone, you know, he's like from a fighting tribe, so to speak, you know, the Samoans, and he's just like, whatever, I'm fighting you. Yeah, like, this ain't shit. But the loss is what makes him, you know, like cry, like, oh my god, like, I was beaten, like, what? Like, I'm not supposed to lose, you know, that type of character. So, like, I love that he can take a beating, like, the beating of his life, and just laugh at it. But losing? Nope. That will crush his soul. That will get him to completely break down. And there's two quotes I want to read to you about Roman Reigns regarding, like, the critiquing of the fans that comes to him. Because, like, I just read them, and I really think he's got it on point. Even though I think he sometimes may be a little too defensive about the people that critique him. So, the first quote, it was an interview where they were critiquing him and whatever. And the first one, this is January 2015, the quote reads, "Every critic I've ever had, they weren't wrestlers. Every wrestler I've ever had critique me, they were always into my stuff or what I'm doing out there. For a non-wrestler, someone who doesn't even know how to lock up, and if we did lock up, they wouldn't know what to do. For them to critique any of us, it really does pop me," right? Again, he gets a little defensive. The second part, "I don't think I'm headbutting with hardcore fans. I feel like they're headbutting me. One thing that confuses me that this is a performance, it is a show, there is a storyline. When people start doing the, he deserves this, he deserves that, really? Did Brad Pitt deserve to be Achilles in Troy?" On point with those two quotes. Like, I love that. Like, he's right. Like, it's a storyline. Like, what is he talking about deserving, you know, in, like, a storyline?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty
good.
I like
however, that. Brad Pitt did deserve the Achilles story. I loved him. I love that movie.
Yeah, I love that. I do love that.
Oh, fantastic. But WrestleMania 31 is in the books. It was an excellent show. We got top-tier mid-card champions. We got John Cena as the U.S. title. You know, love or hate the results of the match, great to see him as a U.S. champion. Love or hate the results of the match, great to see Daniel Bryan as an Intercontinental Champion. Mm-hmm. And both those men are going to elevate those titles and have fantastic matches, you know, working with the other guys on the up and up and everything. But if either of those men lose their belt within 6 months, it wouldn't have been worth it. They both need lengthy reigns with those belts, really, really building them up. Like even if they each hold them for a full year and face each other in a champion versus champion match at WrestleMania 32, like that would be a match I would love to see.
Right.
But both those men are going to go through it. Seth Rollins has immediate contenders in Brock, Roman, and Orton, along with, you know, who knows who else. We've got the new Money in the Bank coming up shortly. We've got Extreme Rules coming up. We've got a champion who will be able to be at all the house shows and all of the Raws and all of the pay-per-views again. We don't know exactly what kind of deal Brock signed. I mean, of course it's going to be a limited thing. He's not going to do house shows or anything like that. Brock would never do that.
Yeah.
But will it be as limited as the previous one, or will it be, you know, you're going to be on every pay-per-view and, you know, at least one Raw a month or something like that? We don't know.
Yeah.
He's suspended for right now, so, I mean, it'll at least be a couple weeks before we see him again.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that Heyman's banned, so Heyman could still be talking and advocating and
yeah,
all of that.
Just like how about before.
Yeah.
Welcome to Suplex City,
bitch. We've got so much on the horizon. 2015 is going to be an excellent year for wrestling because it all rebirths with WrestleMania. LL Cool J said it best. It's the future, baby.
we didn't even mention that promo. Like, that was such a strange... Like, I marked out for it, don't get me wrong, but such a weird...
good promo, like...
Yeah, like LL Cool J selling...
LL Cool J.
Right? Like, LL Cool J was... I feel like that should have been a promo that should have been ran by, Oh, God, what's his name? Tyson, the astrologist. Or not astrologist, what am I saying?
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah, like, with the connection that's and, you know, the... Yeah, like, I don't know why. Like, that I felt that they booked the wrong man for that promo. LL Cool J with that promo? I don't get it. I don't get the connection thing. With him, mind you.
I get it. I liked him doing it.
Yeah.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
All right. Oh, just shit on the deGrasse Tyson for no reason.
I don't shit on him. I just...
Indifferent. But WrestleMania 32, space. Done. Book it.
WrestleMania 32 is going to sell out. But until then, I am Sign the Flame.
And I'm Sir Hedrick. And we out.